The Undivided Podcast is brought to you by 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. Today, one school's remembrance of Martin Luther King Jr. Day raises questions about how schools handle conversations on race and the line between education and activism.
Another body drop, another heart stopped. They find you with your life only to find out the ticket wasn't even meant for you.
Plus, my conversation with Seattle City Attorney Ann Davison. Can she return sanity to City Hall and help deal with some of the city's most prolific public safety challenges?
I think about it all day, every day. Again, it is very genuine that I wanted to be in a place that's impactful.
Thanks for listening to the Undivided Podcast. I'm Brandi Cruz. If you haven't caught it already, I released a bonus episode of the Undivided Digital Show across all platforms earlier today. If you're a subscriber, you can access that on Patreon or Locals ad-free. You can also catch it on YouTube if you are not a subscriber. And it was something that I talked on the podcast Friday about doing. You know, there's been this whole debacle in Washington state. We had a big storm, and you can't help the state plow snow here unless you're vaccinated. And I think it really highlights an important and a critical conversation that lawmakers in Washington state need to have this legislative session about emergency power reform, and not just a conversation. What we need is action. And so I detail my rationale for that and some of the gaslighting gone wild that the state is engaging in. So make sure to check out that bonus episode. Today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Of course, people have different ways of marking the occasion in reflecting on Dr. King's life and legacy. I know a lot of Democrats are using today to underscore one of their priorities, which is getting through a Voting Rights Act in Congress. One high school, however, had a different way of marking the occasion, as reported by my friend Jason Rantz, who hosts the Jason Rantz Show on 770 KTTH. He obtained a video that was played at the North Thurston High School. It's a high school in Washington state. Now, this video was shown to all students at the school actually this past Friday in anticipation of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. The video starts off innocent enough, talking about MLK and his legacy. About 20 minutes in, a student from North Thurston High School's Black Student Union performs a poem that he has written for the holiday. And I'm going to just play that poem for you in its entirety.
America, the land of political conglomerates fighting to assert their dominance amongst the populace. We're in the struggle to find a state of opulence, but I'm convinced nothing will change as long as there are people fighting for Confederate monuments. As long as there are people out there continuing to capitalize on black lives, as long as there are people who really believe that our votes aren't denied, as long as the country treats us like it don't want us but stop us from leaving. Let me slow down, y'all. Let me start with our flag. Does anyone know what the colors mean? Red symbolizes the blood that we shed. The blood of our ancestors, the blood of our grandfathers, the blood of our parents, the blood of our children. The blood we shed building a country that sees us as less than human. The blood we shed for a country that can't tell the difference between a Davion and a Michael. The blood for a system that puts us behind bars for profit. White. It stands for the purity of our culture that is stripped of us and disrespected as a TikTok trend. The purity of little black boys and girls who are victim to a one-way ticket to prison. The purity of our minds who we are as a people being broken down and walked on like a concrete sidewalk. Blue. The symbol of justice, the heroes, defenders of what's right and wrong during the day and night, but struggle to refrain from taking innocent life. The judge, jury, and executioner in every trial is a biased ruling. You're guilty and sentenced for life, committing the worst crime of black heritage. They choke you up and beat you down, thinking if they can't wipe the color from your skin, they'll watch it go out in your eyes. And just like that, you're another black body disenfranchised by the system that claims to see everyone as equal in its eyes. That's a lie. Lies more poisonous than the tear gas that they attack us with. Tired of seeing police chiefs come to stand and read apologies like an actor reads a line off a page. Tired of seeing young people stripped of their color, stripped of their pride, stripped of their voice, stripped of their life. Another body shot. Another body drop. Another heart stopped. They find you with your life only to find out the ticket wasn't even meant for you. But that's our nation. The mighty USA. Where your colored existence is invalid the very moment you survive to see the light of day. The mighty nation where the safety of black homes is no different from a war zone. The mighty nation that can't tell the difference between a black child and a black adult. The mighty nation whose first response is that of a gun and an apology, and expects us to just be okay with that. I'm one of many teenage boys and girls. Boys and girls who are victim to a system of oppression. A system hurting the masses of the blind. Telling half-truths and half-stories just so that it can be palatable for the white people sitting back at their home with their families, watching. Watching an oppression breaking us down for generations and punishing us when we don't even get a chance to stand. Stepping on our throat, not letting us breathe. A thump in the night, a bullet in our side, a little white lie. There is no safety if we can't even interact with our protectors safely. So we run. We run with no set destination or route to our salvation. Time and time again, we are locked up in a prison, beginning to question if it's even right to fight for my own rights. But we've made a stand. As human beings, a collective, a single united front, joined hand in hand as MLK and Malcolm X planned, we had a dream and made it a reality. We are a union of students who are proud of our culture, proud of our individuality, and we are proud to be black.
So it's very intense, let me just say. And I think one of the things Rance reported on this story is that the principal hadn't even viewed the video. It was a video that was shown to every single student, and the principal didn't even watch it first. So, like, anything could have been on there. And I'm sorry, but given how divisive debates have become around the issue of race in this country, as a principal, if you're going to show a video to every single student at your school that is about race, then you probably ought to watch it. I do definitely believe that schools have become unhinged on the issue of race and on political activism. You know, I've done a few stories in the past, you know, teachers making kids do a land acknowledgement, you know, like little tiny kindergartners about how they're living on stolen land. I remember a story about a local theater that was giving out paid internships for the summer, but only to black students because they basically said that if you're white, you can afford to have an unpaid internship, but black kids could not, which my friend Dory would call the soft bigotry of low expectations. I did a story on a display in a classroom that had symbols that represented the political parties, and under the Republican Party, there was a Nazi swastika. I did a story on a Seattle public school teacher who participated in unrest with his students, barging into the King County jail and then putting his hand in the face of a local TV news reporter, trying to get them to leave the premises of the public property that they had just barged into. So there's a lot of issues when it comes to our education system, how it is dealing with the issues of race and sensitive issues around race. And I believe that it has become incredibly divisive. Now, that being said, you know, I think it's easy to be kind of outraged by this video being shown to students. And if I was a parent and didn't know about it and realized the principal hadn't even vetted it, I would be ticked off as well. But let's go do a kind of a play-by-play of this student's poem, shall we?
America, the land of political conglomerates fighting to assert their dominance amongst the populace.
I do agree with that. I like the phrase political conglomerates. I might actually take that from this young man.
We're in the struggle to find a state of opulence, but I'm convinced nothing will change as long as there are people fighting for Confederate monuments.
I don't disagree with that either. You know, the Confederate monument thing, you know, you can't forget your history, but put them in a museum somewhere. I think if you're, you know, attending a school or a public building and you've got a Confederate monument there, that can be uncomfortable for some people. So I gotta say, so far, I don't really disagree with anything this young man has said.
As long as there are people out there continuing to capitalize on black lives, as long as there are people who really believe that our votes aren't denied.
Okay, I don't know what he means by capitalizing off black lives. Unless he's talking about the co-founder of the Black Lives Matter movement who went on a multi-million dollar real estate shopping spree. But I digress. I also agree with him that there are some serious issues in our... First of all, I don't believe anybody's vote is denied at all. I think that if you want to vote in this country, that you are able to do so. I will say that sometimes it is made way too difficult. For example, back in 2020 in Georgia, which has a large Black population, there were voting lines that were 10 hours long. And I'm sorry, that's ridiculous, especially in a country where Election Day is not a federally recognized holiday. For some people, it's impossible to wait in line for hours to vote. They have jobs. They have to feed their families. And so I don't believe in the United States of America that if you are qualified to vote, you should have to wait in line for hours at a time. And some people might say, well, that's the American way. That's ridiculous. People shouldn't have to suffer or sacrifice to be able to exercise a fundamental part of being an American.
The blood we shed building a country that sees us as less than human.
I don't believe that our country sees Black people as less than human now. However, I do believe that our country's original sin was slavery, and it's pretty hard to argue that you don't see a slave as less than human. And so if he's talking about it in the context of our nation's history of slavery, then yeah, I think that's fair. If he's talking about it now, I think that's absurd.
The purity of little Black boys and girls who are victim to a one-way ticket to prison.
Okay, I don't think anyone is victim to a one-way ticket to prison. I do, however, and I've said this before, in this country, slavery robbed Black people of their ability to build generational wealth. And it resulted in higher rates of poverty, and that resulted in higher rates of crime. And yes, that resulted in disproportionate numbers of Black people serving lengthy time in prison.
Blue, the symbol of justice, the heroes, defenders of what's right and wrong during the day and night, but struggle to refrain from taking innocent life. The judge, jury, and executioner in every trial is a biased ruling. You're guilty and sentenced for life, committing the worst crime of Black heritage. They choke you up and beat you down, thinking if they can't wipe the color from your skin, they'll watch it go out in your eyes.
This is just blatant anti-police propaganda that is being forced upon every single student at this school without the knowledge of their parents. And that is absolute absurdity. You know, I talked to a family once. The two sisters of a Pierce County sheriff's deputy who was killed in the line of duty. And his sisters had a really hard time in school during 2020 and, you know, the whole post-George Floyd unrest across the country, hearing their classmates speak negatively about the police and vilify the police when their brother sacrificed his life for the people of Pierce County. And so whenever I think about and hear about instances of police being vilified in our public school system, I think of those two girls and I think about what they went through and what they lost. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't have conversations about policing. I think, for instance, that was pretty hard to avoid after George Floyd. And I think it's fine to give students a space where they can share their feelings and where they can talk about this issue openly. But to force a message like that on every student at this school is wrong. Any teachers who had any involvement in that should be punished in some way. All right, let's continue.
And just like that, you're another Black body disenfranchised by the system that claims to see everyone as equal in its eyes. That's a lie. Lies more poisonous than the tear gas that they attack us with.
Why did they attack you with tear gas? Were you lighting a police car on fire? Were you trying to take over a police precinct? I'm going to need some context to that.
A single united front, joined hand in hand as MLK and Malcolm X planned. We had a dream and made it a reality. We are a union of students who are proud of our culture, proud of our individuality, and we are proud to be Black.
And you should be. And, you know, what I would say is I'm not going to, as a white woman, tell this young Black man how he should feel, what he should think his value is in society. And he is absolutely free to have a passionate opinion about this country. We all are. That's the beauty of this country. And again, I agreed with some of what he said in the video. But what I take issue with is the fact that, again, this goes back to this issue of schools and being completely inept at how to deal with the issue of race. I think schools, in their desire to be seen as woke, are being divisive. And I don't believe that this is helpful in trying to bridge the divides that we have in our country. It's just another example of schools crossing a line from education to activism. Seattle officially has a new city attorney. This is a race that we talked about a lot on the podcast when it was happening in November. It captured attention for a couple reasons. One, it pitted a Republican against a police abolitionist. Having a Republican make it to the general election is a little odd. It's a little unusual in one of the most progressive cities in America. But then you had the police abolitionist, Nicole Thomas Kennedy, who was completely unhinged and had all these tweets, you know, calling cops serial killers, celebrating arsonists and property destruction. So Seattleites, I think, faced with what it would be like to have the police abolitionist, decided to elect a Republican, and her name is Ann Davison. She has been in office now for a little over 2 weeks. She and I sat down to talk about her priorities in office and whether she can truly address some of the profound public safety issues that continue to plague the city.
Almost 2 weeks on the job, right?
Yes.
What have you been doing? Is the city fixed yet? Is it good to go?
It is not fixed yet. It won't be overnight for sure, but it is on its way. We are early days, but active, very active, and couldn't be more thrilled and very humbled and honored to be here at a place to really have positive impact for our city.
One of the things that you've been doing, obviously, is making hires, and there are a few that have been pretty notable. Former United States Attorney Brian Moran, you've brought him on board on a temporary basis.
Yes.
What is he going to be doing?
He's going to be helping with that backlog. And what is the assessment of it? What is the best way forward with that? Is significant, is over 4,400 cases. Each one of those is a victim story. And some of them have been there for a long time. Some will be close to not being able to be prosecuted. And that will be victims that are left without justice. We need to have a way forward with that so that we can start prosecuting crimes from today on. Wanting to see what that information is and move forward.
The backlog, 4,400 cases, what kind of cases are we talking about?
It's everything that we have. It's some of it is theft, some of it is DV, some of it is trespass, some of it's property destruction, it's all kinds.
Have you had a meeting with Bruce Harrell?
Yes.
How'd it go?
Great. I mean, we really, it is about collaboration. I am about operationally making sure we establish or reestablish working relationships across different agencies and jurisdictions. And that means that I'm working with the mayor and the council, that they are the clients. But what my aspect is with public safety is making sure I'm collaborating so we can bring about that public safety part that the voters had talked about.
Do you feel like when it comes to public safety and some of the misdemeanor crimes your office is in charge of, that you and Mayor Harrell are on the same page?
We've gotten to specifics of certain types of crimes, but certainly with what is talked about, when you hear people in the community, when I go out, because some people may not know that I do outreach, spend my off time helping and getting to know people from a wide variety, including people who are currently living unhoused on our streets. And it is important to understand that that is an aspect that we can address. We can be meaningfully intervening at this level.
You are an independently elected official. So when you're looking at how you want to approach the prosecution of crimes, how much does the mayor's input matter to you, if he were to come to you and have an opinion on that?
I certainly, again, listen is my first thing. All right, problem solve is second. And the laws are what they say. We are a society of laws, and our laws are our values. And they are mechanisms to change laws. The solution isn't to ignore them. And so that's really how I would approach all of that.
There is very little doubt that certain members of the city council have a much different view on public safety than you do, have a much different view on the criminal justice system than you do. I think of Councilwoman Chama Sawant as one, Teresa Mosqueda as another, and even to some extent Andrew Lewis. How do you approach your job in the way that you think is best while dealing with what is going to be dissent from the city council?
Again, I sound repetitive, but it is listening first and problem solving second. That is how I approach every issue because I don't think that I or any one of us has the sole answer. The answer is always in the blend. And so it's not going to be something that is mutually exclusive of any way or any approach. We have to have all tools at our disposal. That's why, again, I talk about my team, where people might think that Scott and Natalie look quite different, but really they have a lot more similarities than they do differences. Because in that blend is really going to be the best way forward for the city, because it is encompassing of all aspects of that.
I have no doubt that you'll listen to them, but will they listen to you?
I think I'm quite pleasant, and I will try to get there.
Yeah. I had said that I have high expectations for you. You know, you've been trying to get into public office in some form for a few years. You and I had many, just full disclosure, conversations on background, you know, as you were contemplating running for something else. Do you feel like, because of the national intrigue around your race and around you being a Republican in Seattle, Do you feel a lot of pressure?
I don't.
You don't feel a lot of pressure? Have you looked outside?
I feel very energized.
Good.
I'm very thankful. I knew it was going to happen.
Are you going to cry, Anne?
It means a lot to me to be able to be impactful in a way that is actionable and not simply talk. And I'm just beyond energized. I think about it all day, every day. Again, it is very genuine that I wanted to be in a place as impactful. It has occupied every thought for years for me, because it's what our city is enduring, and people are going through daily life, and what they are having to think about right now is feeling powerless. Mm-hmm. And if it is anything, it is a story of that when you can be focused and you are listening and you do include people, that is really the power.
And if you are interested in watching my full interview with Anne Davison, you can do so by becoming an Undivided subscriber. You can do that in two ways at patreon.com/undivided. That's patreon.com/undivided. Or by becoming a member of my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. You know, I was asked a question today about, are we putting too much pressure on Anne Davison to sort of turn the city around on her own? And I don't know that it's pressure so much as just hope. Seattle has had the same city attorney for 12 years. Obviously, with our issue with repeat criminal offenders and some of the pettier crime, misdemeanor crimes that are happening downtown, obviously things had gotten much worse under the former city attorney's leadership in that office. And so if anything, what Anne Davison represents is an opportunity for change. And I think there's a lot of pressure that comes along with that, but I think people have a lot of hope that she can be part of turning the city around and turning the dial a little closer to sanity. Thank you so much for listening to the Undivided podcast. Share the podcast with a friend. If you've got a friend that you think would enjoy our podcast and our way of thinking here, send it on over to them and see if we can build up our subscriber base. As always, thanks for listening, and thank you for doing your part to give common sense a comeback. The Undivided podcast is brought to you by 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com.